The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So, good evening, and welcome back, and I guess you can welcome me back since I missed last week. And nice to be here with you. So, before I start with what I'm going to teach today, I want to give you a chance to see if you have any questions or reports about how it's going with the meditation at home, or any questions about the instruction last week about emotions or anything. Yes, if you could, to push the button in the middle.
Is that on?
Yeah.
Figuring out this thing about emotions, it seems that I discovered during the week that they're often multifaceted, so I'm not quite sure sometimes what's the emotion, and it seems very difficult without trying to investigate the cause of what you're feeling or the emotion, how you identify what the actual emotion is.
Right.
I don't know if it's a very good question.
It's a great question. So there's two directions to answer the question, your question. One is from the point of view of the basic idea of mindfulness meditation, as I'm teaching it here, or from the point of view of what might be useful for you in the bigger picture of your life. So from the point of view of mindfulness, yes, often our experience can be confusing, it can be multifaceted, and it's hard to pinpoint what it is and identify it in some clarity. You don't need to go probing. You don't need to analyze it. All you need to do is know that something's happening. Something. And one of the great somethings that I've used is the label of chaos. You know, just chaos. And then I'll ask myself, what's chaos like? It's a lot of swirling energies in my torso. So now it's just not the whole universe which is chaotic, but it's a little bit getting closer in. But where in my torso? What's actually in the front and the chest, front rib cage, and in my belly a little bit? And actually, if I look at that, I see it's actually, I'm feeling nervous. So starting at the big picture, sometimes if you just kind of recognize the biggest one without trying to probe, it'll guide you into what specifically where your attention needs to be or can be. But it's good enough just to say chaos. That's what's happening, or something. I don't know what's happening, but something's happening. In terms of emotions, I was once, many years ago, feeling rather off. Now, off is not an emotion, I don't think. But I was feeling kind of off, but I couldn't identify any better than that. And so I lay down on the couch, and I said, okay, I'm just going to feel what off feels like. And so for me, I'd go then to my body. It's one of the great things to do with emotions, feel it in your body. So I just felt in my body, and I felt that a compression in my chest, and I felt that when I breathed in, I wasn't breathing in all the way. It was like resistance at the top of the in-breath. So that's curious. It's part of this being off. So I just kind of felt it there. And hung out with it, and just like it had permission to be there. I didn't make it a problem. I didn't make it a project to fix it. But I just kind of got to know it better and better. And then as I was getting to know it and being with it, then it popped up in my mind, I'm depressed. And as soon as I recognized that I was depressed, the way that my chest was compressed released, and then I could breathe normally again. So that's an example of something very vague, like you talked about, and I just hung out with it as it was, that way. So in mindfulness, we just kind of recognize what's obvious, what's really here, without doing a lot of probing. I don't know about you, I don't know you, but some people live lives disconnected to their emotions, and they haven't spent much time getting to know them, they can't recognize them, they don't have much emotional literacy. And so it's helpful to develop that. So for some people, it's good to do it as an exercise to begin really exploring and considering what their emotional life is in a fuller way. And maybe you go and get a list of, emotions. You know, get a list of 30 emotions. And then start looking at each one and see if you can find anything in your experience which relates to that emotion. And then anything, and look around to the people that you see, and can you identify these nuanced differences in the people? Have conversations with people about their experiences with these 30 emotions. It'll take you a while to do the project. And then slowly you might be able to learn to recognize in them yourself. Or you might try on different names. You know, I'm feeling off, but, you know, am I irritated? Am I impatient? Am I bored? And just kind of go through the list that you've memorized. So one is, so that's not quite mindfulness practice to do that, but it can be a part of a wise life to do that. And once you've kind of gotten more familiar with the emotion, inner emotional territory, then it's a lot more productive to do the straight mindfulness practice. Is that an adequate answer to what
That's great. Thank
you. Okay. Someone else? Either none of you had any emotions for the last week, or if you had them, the instructions you were given, that Tom gave you, just was right, took care of everything. And there was, you know, no questions about emotional life, has no questions in it whatsoever. Any, you're all set for life. Yes.
So the,
some people can't hear them, they have hearing.
But I thought what was really helpful was that the biochemistry of emotions lasts for 90 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, it's quite humbling.
And that we feed, it's the thoughts that feed into the emotions that prolong it. So I thought that was the biggest insight for me. And
yeah.
I've been really trying to practice more about understanding that the biochemistry is different from prolonging, you know, whatever state of emotion I might happen to be in, that's not so useful.
So to use a non-scientific metaphor for this is that if you have a bowl and you drop it, like a big bowl, and you drop a marble on the, down the edge of the bowl, it'll go down, slide up the other side, back and forth, around and around, but slowly the momentum will slow down. And if left alone, eventually it would come and rest at the bottom of the bowl. But you could also drop the marble down, and then as it begins to slow down, you come with your finger and you push it. You keep pushing it, and it'll, you know, spinning there in the bowl for a long time. So many of us have a lot of loose marbles in there that we're, you know, just kind of spinning it. And so that's why it stays more than 90 seconds, is because we're getting in there and kind of giving another spin, We're identified with it, we react to it, we have thoughts that support it. And oddly enough, thoughts which are opposed to certain emotions keep them going. It's like giving them another push. And that's one of the powerful things about the simplicity of mindfulness, is we try to recognize what's there, clearly recognize what's there. We're trying to get out of the way, so we're not adding any more spin. You know, just because it doesn't get reinforced, things tend to then fade away. And I find it a little bit humbling, embarrassing, and irritating that they say the emotions last only 90 seconds. What? Really? Because it seems, you know, do I want to take responsibility for the 91st second? You know, really, that's me? Great. So, someone else? Maybe one more? Anybody finding the meditation helpful for them?
Two things that I found helpful from last week or and this series overall is the story from the Buddha about the first arrow being the one that is, you know, aimed at us, or it comes from external sources, and then the remaining that we endure are all self-inflicted. And so every, like, this past week, I've been trying to be very mindful of, oh, there's that first arrow. Trying to, like, you know, not waiting 90 seconds, unfortunately, but trying to, like, at least understand, like, what the physical sensation of that is, uh-huh. and sort of trying to connect with, like how that physical sensation is playing out in my brain and sort of what the reaction is to that. So it's
great.
It's been very helpful to just have that sort of split second distance.
Yeah, sometimes in that line of these two arrows, sometimes I operate under the perspective that there's only two things ever happening. Let's just make things really easy. Two things. There's what's happening and our relationship to what's happening. And one way to relate to it is to attack something, to cling or to resist or get angry or close down. That's a way of relating. Another way of relating is to stay open, stay present, be alert, be equanimous, be non-reactive. And so it turns out that a lot of the best qualities of a human being tends to thrive in the non-reactivity. In the reactivity, which some people sometimes have strong beliefs about how important it is to be reactive, in the reactivity, some of the best qualities we have tend to get squashed or hidden or eclipsed or something. So, so the idea that... So today we're going to talk about thinking. And thinking and emotions are closely related. And as I've said maybe at the beginning of this course, that we're doing this sequentially for a purpose. And that is that it's easier to be with your body, be present for your bodily... Let's go backwards. It's easier to be with your thoughts if you know how to be with your emotions. It's easier to be with your emotions if you know how to be mindful of your body. And it's easier to be mindful of your body if you know how to be mindful of your breathing. And so it's kind of like a sequence there. And so it goes in the other direction. The more you can be aware of your breathing and know how to use your breathing to really be grounded and centered and present, the easier it is to have a non-reactive and useful awareness of your body. The more you have this useful awareness of your body, ability to be mindful of your body, the more useful it is to, easier it is to be mindful of emotions. Partly because an important part of emotions is the physical part of them. And many people overlook the physical aspects of it, but it's actually an extremely useful part of processing emotions, learning to be free of emotions, to feel how they manifest in the body. For one thing, the body is always in the present moment. Your intellectual life, thinking life, that's somehow involved with your emotions, probably isn't. It's probably involved in the past or the future or something else. So if you can really get yourself in the present moment with emotions, it tends to work a lot better for the practice and for yourself. So the body is an anchor, is a place to kind of connect without getting caught up in stories. And so, but if you the more you're able to be with your emotions, then the more also then you have an ability to be with your thoughts. Because the thoughts that are problematic, in the sense that they pull you away and make it difficult for you to be present, the thoughts that tend to create a filter over your eyes so you don't see clearly, those tend to have an emotional basis. And if you can know how to find and be present for those emotions, then it's easier to become free of those thoughts, not be caught in their grip. So that's kind of the pattern here that we're kind of working with. So we'll start with a meditation. And as part of this meditation, I'm going to do some mindfulness of thinking. And some of it will be part of the practice that we teach here around it. And some of it will be an exercise that you explore this world of thinking a bit. So I just realize this, purposes of kind of understanding the territory is part of what we're doing here. So if you can take a alert posture that also allows you to relax a bit. If you're sleepy, it may be more important to be alert than it is to be, relaxed. And so sitting upright, and then gently closing your eyes, and in an unhurried way, bring your attention into your body. And take a few moments to roam around in your body to find out how it is in there now. How does it feel in your body? Where is it comfortable? Where is it uncomfortable? If there's any places that are uncomfortable, that would be easy to adjust by changing your posture a little bit. You might adjust a little bit. And then you might take a few long, slow, deep breaths. So that those deep breaths, full breaths, remind you, support you in being here, present, at this time, at this place, in your body. The deep breaths remind you that for a few minutes we're going to just focus on the breath, and this is the area, breathing. And then let your breathing return to normal. No need to breathe any special way. And begin tuning in to the body's experience of breathing. What does it feel like in your body to be breathing? And where in your body is it easiest or most pleasant, maybe, to be aware of your breathing, the body breathing? And for the next few couple of minutes, let go of any thoughts that occur. Every time you exhale, let go of your thoughts, so you can better hang out with your breathing. Maybe like you're riding on the breaths with your awareness. And now you can stop paying attention to your breathing. And instead, notice if you're thinking. You're now allowed to think if you like. As you're thinking, see clearly that you're thinking. Experiment with how much clarity you could acknowledge and recognize that you're thinking. Kind of like you're looking, thinking right in the eye, saying, I see you. And if your thoughts go away as you look at them, then you can go back to your breathing. But when you start thinking again, don't let go of them. Turn your attention to your thinking and see it clearly for what it is. And when you're being aware of yourself thinking, notice if you tend to think more in words, like an inner voice, or do you think more in images? Either is fine. Just notice how it is for you. And if you think in words, in an inner voice, where is the loudspeaker for that? Does it have any kind of place in your body that seems to be the location for that voice? And if you're aware of some location, is there any pressure or tension in that location? If so, then feel it. And if you think in images, is there some location where the images are projected? Or where they appear. And is there any tightness or pressure or leaning forward that's associated with thinking in images? Is there any tightness in your body or tension that's associated with your thinking? It might be around the eyes, the jaw, the forehead, many places. It might be pressure, hardness, contraction inside your skull. And then as you exhale, you might relax the thinking muscle, the place of tension and holding that might be associated with thinking. And is there any emotion associated with your thinking? There doesn't have to be, but if there is, notice. Intermixed with your thinking, is there apprehension or contentment? Is there aversion? Or happiness? And if you're noticing yourself thinking, can you also notice the degree of interest you have in your thoughts? Are you closely committed to them, interested? Is there a kind of attitude that they're important? Or are you more casual and easygoing about them? Take them or leave them, and it doesn't really matter. What's the attitude you have about yourself thinking? Is your thinking hurried or is it calm? Is your thinking more on the harsh side or is it more on the friendly, kind side? What's the quality of your thinking? And then let your attention return now to your breathing. And perhaps to reestablish yourself with the breathing, take a couple of slightly deeper breaths. As you exhale, let go of your thoughts. Let go and settle into your body. And as you're with your breathing, if you should start thinking, or thinking becomes strong, take just a few moments to see the thinking, look at the thinking directly. Just acknowledge its presence. Don't let go of it or push it away, but just fully and completely acknowledge it, see it for what it is, feel it, the energy of it, the sensations of it. And after it's been acknowledged like this, then if you'd like, you can let go of it or return to your breathing. In a peaceful way, when thinking becomes strong, turn towards it and acknowledge its presence. See it for what it is, not as a problem, but as a phenomena, just to know simply. And then to end this sitting, you can take a couple of deep, slow breaths, feeling your body. And when you're ready, you can open your eyes. In a few minutes after I tell you a little story, I'd like to hear from some of you what that was like, to focus your attention on your thoughts. But here's a little kind of story. Imagine that you go for a nice long hike in the countryside, and it's a nice day, it's warm, comfortable, and the length of the hike is just right for you, and you arrive at lunchtime at the edge of a river, and there's a nice oak tree, and you sit on the shade of the oak tree, and you have a little lunch, you feel very content, and nothing to do, nowhere to go, just for those times, it's just nice to be there, and you feel so happy that after a busy life, doing a lot of things, and worried about all kinds of things, that for these minutes, you don't worry about anything. And you don't have to do anything or accomplish anything. It just feels so good just to be there. And it's nice to look at the river. The river goes by and just you feel so present and so content just being here. Nice. And then you see that there's a big Louisiana showboat coming down the river with, with a band that's playing music and casinos and slot machines and all kinds of entertainment and lots of people and having a great old time. And you're watching them come down, and then then at some point you notice that you're on the boat. But then you realize, you know, actually you've been on the boat for a few weeks. What happened to the nice thing? You were back there at the river under the oak tree. That was nice back there. And so, wow, you know, but this is a long, I really got caught on that boat trip. So you manage somewhere to get off the boat, and it takes a while to make your way back up river to that oak tree again. Ah, here again I am. So nice. The horse, the solid bank of the river, here I am. And you're just sitting there content, watching the river go by. And then comes down the river a big war boat. You know, guns blasting, fighting the great war, the righteous war. And then you find yourself, you're on that boat. But that takes a few years to get off that. You finally get off and you make your way back up the river and sit there with the oak tree, and that's nice. And it's so nice and content again. And then coming down the river is this decrepit old raft that's barely floating. Poor little thing. Everyone feels sorry for the poor, you know, little, you know, broken raft, and it's about to drown, you think. And the next thing you know, you're on that raft. And you spend years, decrepit, old, poor raft, you know, just being on it, until you realize, wait a minute, what am I doing here? I was on the riverbank where it was so safe and secure, and so you make your way back up. So you finally make it up to your oak tree, and you sit down, and for a few moments you're content, you're just there. And then coming along comes another boat. And you can decide which boat this one is, your favorite boat. And the boat comes along, and you sit there, and you just watch it go by. You wave, and you don't get on. So this is an analogy for our thinking. Our thinking comes along, and, you know, new subjects come along, new things to think about come along, and it's kind of like these boats coming down the river. But we don't see them as boats. We don't see them as just phenomena that's there for a few moments. We get on the boat. We get involved. We start thinking those thoughts. And we can get involved in some of these boats for minutes, for hours, and some of the more subtle ones we're on for years and years, kind of reviewing and living by, and they become so second nature that we don't even recognize they're there. So one of the functions of mindfulness of thinking is to become, is to see how we think clearly enough, to see the thinking, see it as a phenomena, and be able to stay in this contented place where we don't have to get on the boat, we don't have to pick them up, we don't have to get involved. It's not a rejection of thoughts. It's not saying that thoughts are bad or you shouldn't be thinking. But it's deciding not to get on the boat. So that's the analogy. So we're trying to do mindfulness of emotions. And so one of the ways we do mindfulness of thoughts, one of the ways we do mindfulness of thinking is, rather than treating thoughts as the enemy or as distractions, which many meditators will do, because it's easy to do that, because the common thought is, if only I could stop thinking, then I could be present. If only I stopped thinking, then I could stay with my breathing. And then we set up this tension between the mind that's thinking and our desire to be present here or be with the breath or something. In mindfulness meditation, we don't need to have that tension, because if the thinking is predominant enough that it's hard to be with the breathing, or if you've lost the breath, then the idea is to make the thinking the object of the mindfulness, the object of the attention. And you turn around and you look at it. I don't know if this idea works for you, but for me it works well, the idea, I look it right in the eye. I see you. There you are. This is a thought. And if I can see it really clearly, then I'm on the dry riverbank. I'm not on the boat. But sometimes it takes a while to learn to discover what it's like to step back and see it rather than kind of being involved in it. It takes a while sometimes. So for a while, you might have to be on the boat in order to kind of look around and discover what it's like to be thinking and all that. So in that last meditation we did, I asked you to let go of your thoughts and turn and look at your thinking, just directly, to see it. And were any of you surprised by what happened when you turned and looked at it? What happened for some of you?
That's the answer.
Meaning that?
There wasn't much there.
And wasn't it, did you stop thinking, kind of?
Yes.
And before you turned to look at thoughts, were there thinking then? So you were trying to be with your breath, but there was, you know, thinking went on. So why do you think when you turned towards it, they kind of stopped? When you finally had permission to think.
Sometimes, you know, they say you want things you can't have. Well, you can have it. There it is.
Oh.
I'm not really sure, but it's maybe an anxiety about what's there. And then if you look at there and it's, you know, you confront it and, you know, it's, realize there's not really that much to worry about.
That's wisdom operating. That's nice. So you have some wisdom about it, and that kind of, then you don't quite feed it anymore, get involved. Another reason why sometimes thoughts quiet down is that when we clearly look at it and see it directly, we're not pushing the marble anymore. Because some of that spinning of the thoughts happens almost subconsciously in the background. We don't even know how involved we are. But if we really step back and really see it clearly, and that the operating idea is clearly, like really, I see your thoughts, that in that clear seeing, we're not spinning anymore. There's the energy of being involved is no longer there. And if emotions last 90 seconds in and of themselves, thoughts last 0.9 seconds or, you know, 0.09 seconds if unless we're involved. Unless we feed them. So someone else, what was it like to do that? And then after asking you to look at the emotion, I also ask you to kind of notice a little bit about the emotion. Do you think in words or think in images? Is there a location for it? Is there any tension or pressure associated with it? Any emotion associated with it? Was it interesting for you to notice that? Did you notice any of that? So right behind you.
Well, I did notice that the thoughts seemed to be located in my head, physically.
Uh-huh.
And I was able to identify tension.
Uh-huh.
Depending on what the thought was, you know, in mostly my shoulders, and that seemed to lessen.
So if you felt the tension, then
yeah, and then I was able to kind of let it go.
And then what happened to your thoughts then?
And then they kind of dissipated.
Interesting.
And I was able to return to the breathing. Uh-huh. So, but I thought that the where they were located, I mean, where is the thought located, it felt to me like it was, you know,
nice
in my head. So.
Right. So one of the thinking gets fueled, or think of it as being fueled by different things. And one thing it's fueled by is tension. So certain thoughts produce tension, but once we're tense, it's kind of like the tube of toothpaste is being squeezed, and so toothpaste is going to come out, and so you're. The tube of thoughts is squeezed. And so, the mind is going to want to keep thinking if in that tension. But if you can recognize any tension and pressure connected to thinking and relax it, then you're much less likely to kind of think so strongly.
The same thing that happened last week happened this week with emotions and thoughts, which is I feel like I'm not having a lot of either. And I think that it's kind of actually the image. And when you said, do you think in thoughts or words, I would say most often in images. And I just had images of piles of wood. And then at one point, it was like a flat wall. And I'm pretty sure what it is that sometimes when you're in a dealing mode, you're not investigating and thinking. You've kind of... So I think I'm kind of in a place where I've decided that some people use the expression hunkered down, or like if you're dealing with something, you're kind of braced.
Bracing yourself.
And I think when you're braced, even, you know, neurologically, you're less sensate to things. Mm-hmm. So I kind of think I made the decision that I wanted to be in a more peaceful place, and it's not, I keep thinking, God, am I developing dementia? I'm just not having any thoughts. But, and I'm usually someone who's pretty connected to emotions, and I don't feel, uh-huh. I feel like I kind of made a decision that right now is not the time.
Nice. Sounds very nice to me. And so is it basically a nice way of being? Does it feel good?
Yeah. No, I think it's peaceful.
Great. So I would enjoy it, mm-hmm. and let that be the foundation to keep doing the meditation, because there are, that degree of peace is nice, but there's actually a greater sense of peace or greater capacity of insight that can happen from that kind of place where you're peaceful and calm in that way. It's a good thing, a good place to be. Someone else? Yes.
So when you were guiding the meditation, I found that I couldn't really catch my thoughts. Like I would get flown away and it would jump from topic to topic. It would be long before I really realized that I'm thinking. So is there any particular way I should deal with that?
So see if I understand you. So by the time you noticed you were thinking, I
was far away into the thought.
Into the thought. You got lost in it.
Yeah.
So how did you get out?
I mean, eventually I realized, and then I tried to look at it, but it was gone.
Then it was gone.
Yeah.
Oh, so you get on the boat, but once you look down at when finally realized you thought about looking down at the boat you're on, the boat vanished.
Kind of.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So one of the lessons for that is that when thoughts drop away quickly by looking at them, then we don't have a lot of identification with them. There's not a lot of power or strong interest in them. But sometimes it's very hard to let go of thoughts. I mean, some thoughts just go along and just don't want to stop. I mean, if you, if you just robbed the bank downtown and, you know, and the sirens are going around and you're sitting here trying to meditate and, you know, let go of your thoughts, it'd probably be pretty hard because, you know, spinning along. Sometimes the thoughts spin and those kinds of thoughts become interesting to investigate and feel the emotions that are there, the physical sensations connected to them, because the more the thoughts want to stay and insist on operating, the more there's physical and emotional aspects of them. And if we can feel the physical and emotional aspects of them operating, that's a good place to put your attention, because then you're going to be less likely to get pulled into the story of the thought. And if you're in the story, then you're on the boat. And so, you know, you spend time on the boat. And that's normal. And it takes a while, as people learn to meditate, to learn to recognize that, to recognize it earlier and earlier, to recognize how to get off the boat, to learn to let go. And so all this takes time. But, you know, I think that you had a good lesson today.
I would say my experience was one, I feel like I got on a lot of boats, took a lot of trips, and then I'm aware of carrying some tension in my body, and quite aware also feels like a feedback loop, kind of, that as you say, sensations in your body, maybe it's the squeezing of the tube of toothpaste, but can generate, you know, if I feel nervous or anxious, then I sort of think about, well, why I'm feeling this way, and then it takes me to what are the sources of that, and then I'm thinking about it and I'm not in the present, or I'm anticipating something or reviewing something. So that feels like a very strong loop and link feedback system that is challenging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So now that you see that how it operates this way, how can you benefit from that?
Well, I mean, my first thought, part of it is I feel like paying attention to my body is an important place to start because, you know, things as simple as, you know, appropriate rest and downtime and things, I think could diminish some of the physical experiences that help feed and trigger thoughts.
Great. I think that's about it. That sounds like wise living. Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Someone else?
Thanks. I noticed that when I would have the thoughts, I would immediately, but this time I was noticing the emotion that was linked to the thoughts. And then the first thought I had was linked to anxiety, and then I was able to sort of move on from that. And the next one, I started thinking about someone I was concerned about and feeling concerned about them. And then I thought, well, why can't I think about them? What's wrong with it? I'm concerned about them. And then I started debating, well, why am I not allowed to? And then, or is it just when you're meditating you're not allowed to? Or how does it work?
Well, this today you're allowed to. So, that's a good question about our thoughts. We can have a different. There's different choices about the relationship to thoughts that we can have, and some of that has to do with our assessment of what's useful at any given time. Not a few people realize when they start noticing. And one of the advantages of doing mindfulness and when you're paying attention to what's going on is that people start noticing what they're thinking about. And that's an interesting thing to discover, because there's a good percentage. You can decide what percentage of people who a high degree of what they think about is nonsense. And not a few people I've known have looked at their minds and said, "Wow, there's a lot of nonsense in there." The nonsense I don't have to think about. The other thing that we can see sometimes is when you start paying attention is how repetitive our thoughts are. If anybody walked next to me and talked as incessantly to myself as I talk to myself, that's bad enough. But if they were repeating themselves as much as I repeat myself, I would want to question their sanity. And I certainly would lose interest. But what's most fascinating is that we can have the same kind of thought, same concern, repeat it over and over again, and it can be just as interesting the first time as the as the 500th time. So why? To start looking at our mind, understanding what's going on in there. What are these thoughts, and how come they're so repetitive? What's happening? And then if you kind of hang out and just look at your thoughts, be aware of them, kind of check them out, chances are that a high degree of the thoughts that you have, one of the primary subjects is you. A lot of thinking has to do about myself and how I relate to things, what's in it for me, and these people I'm concerned with. And there's a self-referential aspect with a lot of thinking. There's nothing wrong with that, but, it's good to have breakfast. But nothing wrong with having a breakfast. But you don't want to have breakfast all day long, nonstop. It's okay to be thinking about yourself. But if that's what you do all day long, and with a lot of the same concerns over and over again, then it's good to take a deeper look and see what's going on. And so it might be you realize when you see the repetitive nature of it and the nonsense of it sometimes, then it might be useful to let go. And so I like to think of it as surface thoughts. If we just have surface chatter in our mind when we meditate, just let go of it and go back to your breathing. But sometimes it's not surface chatter. Sometimes it's stronger what's going on. And sometimes in our life, it's important to think and contemplate and reflect. That's an important part of a wise life. But in meditation, what we're trying to learn to do in meditation is something that's very different than how most people use their minds. And that is to learn to observe what's happening instead of being on the boat, instead of being involved with what's happening. So with thinking, in meditation, where I'm teaching you here, you're not actually required to stop thinking. It's okay to think. But what we're trying to do is to be able to see the thoughts as a boat going down the river as opposed to being on it. And in doing that, we're learning how to be free of our thinking. And one of the primary ways human beings are not free is by how they're locked into their thoughts, their beliefs, their stories and all that, and how they live in them and how they see the world through them. And so if we can step back on the riverside, and look at the boats go by, there's a tremendous amount of freedom that can be found. And then there might be some boats we decide to get on because it's useful. But, you know, it's our choice back and forth. So in meditation, it's okay to think, but we're trying to then step back and take an honest look and say, oh, this is thinking, and not participate in the thoughts anymore. Later, you can pick them up again after meditation. So if it's surface thoughts, you can let go of them and come back to your breath. If it feels like it's more insistent and more stronger, let yourself think. What you do then is we let go of the breathing and we turn the attention fully to be aware, oh, this is thinking. Sometimes people find when they really acknowledge it that way, it just fades away. Sometimes it doesn't fade away. If it doesn't fade away, then there's things you can just be present for. You can be present for the physical sensations connected to thinking. And it's interesting that if there is tension or pressure associated with it, you're allowed to relax that a little bit. Don't make it a big ongoing project, but even the Buddha said, if you're thinking a lot, relax the thinking muscle. And then, but also, what are the emotions that are part of it? In the present moment, you don't have to do a lot of digging. Don't go like analyzing. But just look around. Is there an emotion connected to it? And what's interesting about emotions is that emotions, for some trains of thought, boats of thoughts, are the factory that produces the thoughts. So if you let go of a thought, but you haven't attended to the factory, that factory is going to keep pumping out more thoughts. So you can let go of some thoughts over and over and over again, and you don't understand why they keep coming back. It's because the emotion that's underlying it has not been attended to or looked at. A good example is if people spend a lot of time thinking about the future and planning, a fair percentage of that is kind of thinking is motivated by fear, apprehension, anxiety. And so then what we do is instead of looking at the thoughts, we would turn our attention to do mindfulness of the emotion, mindfulness of the fear or the anxiety. And that allows it to be settled. It's kind of like the thought is the messenger. It's like someone waving a flag and say, over here. And then we get mesmerized by the flag. But what the flag is saying, over here, you need to pay attention over here. And you want to pay attention to, you know, the underlying emotion. That's what's much more important. So again, we're not participating in the thoughts exactly, but we're tuning into something that's an important part of the thinking system. And part of that system is the emotions, and then also the sensations that are part of it. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. You think that answers your question, or do you want to ask more or differently?
No, I think that was helpful. Thank you.
Yeah, it was long-winded, so I'm a little bit worried I've lost you. Yes, please, if you can.
So you said that thoughts can be in the form of words or images. For me, it's always strong words, like loud voices, very intense. and the images are always blurry. And if the images dominate, then it means a very weak thought. It's like a passing cloud. Oh. And I've heard that, so in all your talks, you talk about the inner narrator and you don't talk about the inner movie screen. Does it mean the more intense thoughts are always in terms of words? Or is it just that with me, it's always with words? What's it like?
I think that the latter, just think about it, it's for you. That's your way. There's so many different ways that people, you know, operate in their mind. And it's a tremendous diversity there. And it's fascinating to see it. So this is for you. And maybe, you know, if you noticed that I refer to the narrator a lot, I apologize that if I keep using myself as the example, because, you know, I tend to think in words. So that just, you know, it's, you know, that's what's the example that's handy. So one of the things that's interesting with the inner narrator, with the inner voice, is in fact to notice the, one interesting thing to do with it is imagine that you're listening to your inner voice in the way you would listen to someone who is speaking a language you don't know. So you have no idea what they're saying, but you can tune into the emotional quality of what they're saying. They're yelling, or they're whispering, or they're seem very harsh, or they're very gentle and soothing. And so listen to your inner voice, and what's the quality and the tone of that voice? And that can be fascinating. And some people, they start doing that, and if you ask them, does that voice sound like anybody you know? And occasionally people will say, oh, yes. That's my harsh parent. Or I had this teacher in second grade who was so cruel, and turns out I've internalized that voice or something. Or it's so loving and kind, and that's just like my grandparent who was so nice to me, and I've kind of internalized that. So sometimes you get this very interesting information about yourself by paying attention to qualities of it. Sometimes when it's very loud, that's also very interesting to notice what the emotion is, because that there's something that's driving that loudness. And so what is driving it? Is it fear? Is it desire? Is it the desire to be seen, to be known? Is it a desperation to understand? Is it, you know, all can be an infinite number of things. And we don't analyze, not like we're going in there to poke around and analyze, but it's part of the kind of just settling back, being quiet, and kind of looking around. In a way, you can look around and see the bigger picture if you're not mesmerized by this story, if you're not lost in the content of what you're thinking. And so we say in this mindfulness meditation that we're more interested in the process than we are in the content. So that what story you're telling is not important. It's the process of how you're telling a story, what goes on, that we're paying attention to. Is that okay? Okay. So I'd like to now to offer you the simplest way of doing, including thinking as part of the meditation. It's a little bit repeating myself. So it's useful for most people to make breathing kind of the home base, your meditation home. So you just kind of, you know, be with your breathing as much as you can, focus on the breathing. And if you're able to do that, but then the thoughts come in, if the thoughts are in the background, you know, really in the background, just leave them there and stay with the breath. The image I was given for this once was, if you're walking in a park with a friend talking, and you're kind of engaged in the conversation, but it's a fall and the leaves are falling, and at the peripheral attention, you kind of recognize the leaves are falling, but you don't really give it much attention. So in the same way, if the thoughts are in the background and not really interfering, just don't be concerned about them. Just let them be there in the background. It's when the thinking comes into the foreground, or it comes into the foreground so much that you get involved in them, or you even get lost in them, that then you can let go of your focus on breathing and very kind of calmly as you can, turn your attention to the thinking, and thinking then becomes a completely valid focus of meditation. You do thinking meditation. Not to think better, but to really see, like look thinking right in the eye and recognize, oh, this is thinking. This is like a human mind that's doing its thinking. Isn't this fascinating? Look at that. And what you're thinking is not that important. It's just the fact that you see yourself, oh, I'm thinking, look at that. And if you notice that, obviously notice that it's kind of surface chatter, nothing important, you might want to just let go and go back to your breathing. But if those surface chatter keeps coming back over and over again, you can't get rid of it, or if it's not surface chatter, if it's really strong and it's like compelling your thinking, then you can stay and just kind of be present and just be with the thinking. In order to help you stay present, some people find it helpful to say the word in the mind very calmly, thinking, thinking. Or if it's obvious what kind of thinking, some people say planning or remembering. And by very gently having that word, it's like helping the mind stay right here, stay with it and see it. Stay here and see it. Stay on the riverbank. Don't get on the boat, but really see it. Planning, planning, war, you know. Poor me going by, you know, that's the thought, but just see it. And if you're hanging out and it's not going away, then you have lots of time on your hands. So then you kind of begin looking around. Looking around and feel it physically. Look around and feel what's going on emotionally. Until you find some place that seems to be, you know, part of the system, part of the process, that'd be useful to attend to. It might be the physical tension or pressure. It might be the emotion that should be attended to. At some point, when things quiet down with your thoughts, or they feels like they no longer need to be acknowledged, then you can go back to your breathing. So that you go back to your breathing. Now, this is not supposed to be a complicated process. So just breathing. Notice if you're thinking, say thinking, and come back. That's all you do. If that's all you do, your time is well spent. If every time you think, you let go of it and come back, the time well spent. But this mindfulness practice that we're doing is not just about letting go. It's also turning towards the thinking so we don't have to let go of it to find our freedom. We can actually, what we do with mindfulness practice, we learn to turn towards everything and learn how to be free with it. So nothing needs to be rejected. So no matter what the emotion is, we learn to turn towards it in a calm, steady way so we can just see it without being involved in it or caught in it. If it's strong body sensations, we learn to turn towards it. We don't have to reject it or let go of it to find our happiness. We can find some peace with it while it's there. And so now they can do the same thing with thinking. We don't have to reject thoughts. We don't have to have a policy that our thoughts are bad or wrong to think, but we can just look at it. Oh, this is thinking. And then remember about the boats. You're a boat. I'm here under the oak tree. Don't trick me. Something like that. How does that sound to you? Do you have any questions about that? Is that about that instruction? Okay, so in that case, let's do it. So if you'd like to stand for 30 seconds and stretch out your legs and get refreshed. So I think it's fair to say that many people get easily mesmerized by their thoughts. And they give the thoughts a lot of authority. They seem very important. We get caught in them, involved in them. And we lose something in the process of being too kind of caught up in them. One way to step back and get a kind of different perspective on thoughts, whatever thought you have, is to take a moment, look at your thought, recognize what you're thinking, and then reflect that 5 billion years of evolution has come to this. Wow. You know, in some sense, you know, we're, each of us is the pinnacle of evolution at this very moment, right? And wow, 5 billion years. It came to me thinking about pizza. Or who's won the World Series? Or, you know, it's kind of like, what? Yeah, that's a kind of different perspective on your thoughts. Wow. So, close your eyes. And take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And as you exhale, see if you can let go of any tension, maybe let go of holding, bracing. And let your breathing return to normal. Then take a few moments to scan through your body to see if there's any obvious places that you can relax and soften. Maybe the muscles of your face. Maybe your shoulders. And maybe your belly. Relax and soften. And then connect yourself, connect your awareness to the body breathing. Taking a few moments to familiarize yourself with what it feels like in your body to be breathing. Perhaps as you exhale, to let go of your thoughts, relax the thinking muscle. Continue with your breathing, but if you find yourself getting involved in thoughts, take a moment to turn towards that, to see clearly that you're thinking, maybe by calmly, maybe even sweetly, saying thinking, or planning, or remembering. Fantasizing, kind of say a very quiet little word that helps you recognize that you're thinking, And then see if you can let go of it then, once it's acknowledged, and begin again with your breathing. If whatever you're thinking about, if your thinking is persistent, look around a little bit to see if there's any emotion underlying it. And if there is, then do mindfulness of the emotion. Or is there any tension or pressure physically in your body? If there is, then do mindfulness of the body. And you can do that as long as the thinking is strong. Or if you feel it's acknowledged well enough, you might want to start again with your breathing. And if you find yourself on a boat, take a few moments to notice what it's like to be on the boat. What's it like to be involved in the thinking, caught up in the thought? In the last few minutes, couple of minutes of this sitting, experiment or explore what it would be like if being mindful of anything that happens, breathing, body, emotions, thoughts, sounds, that you did it as if you were sitting under the oak tree. And everything else is just a boat going by. Nothing to get involved in, nothing to react to. Nothing to lean into, nothing to push away. But also nothing to get involved in, no boats to board. Just something to be known. And then to end this sitting, you can take a few long, slow, deep breaths. And when you're ready, open your eyes. I find it helpful to think of thinking as occurring at different layers in the mind. And the kind of the uppermost layer is discursive thinking. So thoughts that involve having a conversation with yourself or conversation with someone else, describing something, discussing something with someone, being involved in a story. And then kind of at a more intimate or deeper layer is thoughts that are having to do with what's happening in the present moment in a very simple way, without analysis and without evaluation or judgments. So a car goes by and I thought, oh, there's a car that goes by. There's an itch. I have an itch. There's an itch right now. And there's a qualitative difference between being involved in a discursive conversation in the mind versus a very much simpler, just, oh, there's a car going by. And then even more simpler than that can be the thought, sound of roaring, itch, rather than there's an itch happening, or I'm having an itch, just an itch, coolness, warmth. There's a simple kind of one-word recognition of what something's going on. And that comes from a quieter, stiller place in the mind. And the main kind of thinking that we're trying not to get lost in, the boat we're trying to avoid, is the discursive thinking, which is kind of more the coarser, bigger kind of aspect of mind. And there are other kinds of thoughts which might operate in a very innocent way as we meditate, that you feel like they come out almost out of the peacefulness or the calmness or the stillness. And those we don't necessarily own, but they're kind of part of kind of helping us be here and kind of about the present moment in a simple way. Finally, one of the interesting exercises around thinking is if you have an experience of your equivalent of sitting under the oak tree being content and just watching and being watching the river go by, not really thinking about anything, and then you get on the boat. So say you're sitting and meditating and you're relatively peaceful and relatively calm and you're pretty present and it feels kind of spacious and quiet to be here. And then you're minding your own business, but your mind suddenly thinks about, some partner that jilted you 40 years ago. And then this is an important story. I mean, this is like, this is really like serious now. And so, you get completely locked into the story and, who said what to who and what happened and he said, she said, they said, all this stuff, So that's a very interesting contrast. Take a moment to see what shifted and changed inside of you. What was lost, what was gained, what happened? And like, for example, what some people will say is that when the mind is relaxed and present, it feels more like there's light. And when they get locked into a thought, it's gotten dark. When they're kind of present really present and here in a mindful way, it feels like there's space. But when we get locked into our thoughts, it feels like it's gotten tight, claustrophobic. And so that's an interesting, see that difference. And as we kind of see these kinds of differences, we tend to become more familiar with how it's actually working and what's going on. It's kind of like someone sees how the magic trick is done and then they're less mesmerized by the magic. So we get mesmerized by these thoughts, but as we start understanding the inner ecology of what happens and what's going on, we get wiser and wiser about it. And as we get wiser, we tend to have much more freedom and much more choice about our thinking. And we start beginning to adjust our thinking so our thinking is much more wise and also much more friendly. People who develop strong mindfulness tend to develop a friendly relationship to their inner life and to the world around them. And so their thoughts start becoming friendly. That's pretty good. But it takes, learning what's going on there first. And sometimes some people, when they learn what's going on in a thinking world, it's not always good news in there. Some people are harsh and cruel and angry and judgmental and all kinds of things goes on. When you do mindfulness meditation, for the purposes of the meditation practice, there's no need whatsoever to be upset with yourself, to blame yourself or feel like it's wrong. You're just another person, the pinnacle of evolution. And this is what it's come to. Evolution came to this. You didn't come to this. Blame evolution. And you've come to this, and this is the beginning of healing. This is the beginning of becoming free, is to really start seeing how it operates in you. And then as you do this mindfulness practice, you'll certainly see that over time, things will begin shifting and changing. With mindfulness, things shift towards greater health. So there is a handout on the end of the stage over there that describes these instructions in a little different way and gives little exercises or little homework if you like that kind of thing. And then next week we have our last week that we bring all this together and in a variety of ways and discuss a little bit how you can take it further and the potential of this. Because I said, you know, that breath is a foundation for body, body's a foundation for emotions, emotions are foundations for thinking, and all those together is the foundation for wisdom. So that's for next week. So thank you all. Oh, before you go, so there are here these people, wonderful IMC practitioners who are in this Dharma Mentor Training Program. If you could stand, so because if you have any questions, comments about this, so it's Lauren and Sylvie today, and I don't know if Sally, do you want to participate in that? You want to stand? Sally, so you could ask them any questions about this meditation, the instructions, and they'd be happy to answer, or about IMC, and I'm here as well. Thank you.
Your peripheral vision, and your